Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And he said, "I'm sorry, Kent. It's gone. And I just fell in the road. And I remember just running in the house and telling you, and you just collapsed too, because this was our dream. This was our forever place." Howdy. My name is Kent Rollins. I've been a cowboy and a chuck wagon cook for over 30 years, cooking for ranches all across America. You might have seen me on the Food Network or alongside my beautiful wife, Shannon, on our YouTube show, where we share cowboy cooking from the trail. But now we're going to take you behind the scenes to real campfire conversations. Join us as we share humor, cowboy wisdom, and stories full of history, heart, faith, and of course, a little fire. So grab you a cup of coffee, pull up a chair, and welcome to the podcast. You know, Shane, I think in this episode, I do want to talk about the fire and the devastation, the house we lost, all the belongings that were in it. But also there's great meaning and hope, because not all fire is bad. Some fire molds you. It's like an old blacksmith, you know, he pumps on that big old forge with a billow, you know, the coals burning bright, and he can put a piece of metal in there and shape it into something. The good Lord let us walk through fire and molded us in what we are today.
Yeah, I know if you guys have been following us any amount of time, you've heard us talk about the house fire that we went through. And just kind of briefly, and I think it's a little interesting, we haven't fully broken down the whole situation that we went through. I think it's interesting because we just think you guys are family and that we talk to you every day. So, of course,
they already knew it.
You already knew, and you'd already been to our table and we've talked about it. We forget. No, that hasn't. So we wanted to let you in a little more, give you a little more details about what we went through, and also like how we came through it.
Yeah.
And how that was kind of a bigger picture of life in general.
Yep.
And Kent, you just made really interesting connections as we were talking about this with the cooking fire, the campfire, the house fire, and how all of those things can change you and mold you.
They do.
So that's kind of what we're going into on this episode. But to lead us in, Kent, you have been posting weekly stories. These appear on our YouTube channel community tab. We also put them in our weekly email newsletter. If you guys are interested in that, you can sign up on our website. But these have been really gaining some traction. If you all don't know, Kent, you're a great storyteller. You talk. You're a great talker. You talk a lot.
My penmanship is bad. Is that what we're getting at?
But surprisingly, to many people who don't know, you are a really fantastic writer. You've kind of gone through different phases in your life where sometimes you write a lot, sometimes it goes away, which I think we all kind of go through different phases, right? But you brought it back.
Yeah, I mean, every once in a while you think, I'm going to start something, you know, and it's like a job. I'm going to start digging this hole. And after you've dug like 600 of them, you think, I'm going to quit digging holes. But when I started writing these stories, I just wanted to reach out to people to let them know, you know, whatever you're facing in life, whatever you're going through, there's ways to get through it. You're never alone. The hard times will make for better times. I mean, there's always a blessing to me that I see through it. And what started the first week of January is still going strong every Sunday.
Yeah. And one you recently wrote in particular really was gaining some traction. Yeah. And it was called Before the Ashes Grow Cold.
Yeah.
And you had a great story about Mac and a fire.
Yeah, that I was one of the first ranches I ever cooked on in my life that was for any length of time. You know, it's 3 weeks in. And
where were you at?
South of Abilene, Texas. And went in about the, I'd say it was middle of April. And didn't know the country, didn't know the people.
What's that like when, I mean, you're comfortable in your cooking.
Yeah.
Right? You know how to do a fire. You know how to grill a steak, Dutch oven cook. So that's comfortable. But what's it like when you go, it's like you're going to a new school. Like, what is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you ain't got no friends, you know? I'm all by myself. I'm sort of an outcast out here on a desert island. We just hope that these people don't drag me off of it and drown me, you know?
And no one would find you out in the middle.
No, they sure wouldn't. But I was using their wagon. Their team was a very, for one of the first ranches I cooked on, it was traditional, but you move camp every day after lunch, which is hard.
And so you would hook the wagon up to a team of horses?
Team of mules, and they was the sorriest mules ever.
Why is that?
They tried to kill you every day. Take seven cowboys and me to get them harnessed. They try to bite you, kick you, everything in the world, you know. And it was a struggle every week and every day just to get to the next camp. And by the time I was in there 3 weeks, they was a whole lot better. But
well, and I want to stress, so moving camp every day is really hard. Ooh. Most of the times when we're cooking on wagon, we stay in camp. Usually we stay right in camp, yeah. The whole works, which is on average like 5 to 7 days. The longer camps though, you're moving camp. So that means, did you pitch a teepee?
Never pitched a teepee, never set up a fly, slept under the wagon, you know.
Because you were moving so constantly.
Yeah, and I'm
so
thinking, I ain't got time to do all this stuff.
So you're packing up the wagon every day, then unpacking, cooking 3 meals?
Yeah, I would cook breakfast and lunch, wash the dishes, load the wagon, drive 6 or 7 miles, cook supper, get my bedroll out, cook breakfast and dinner. And it was that way every day, you know, and it gets to wearing on you.
Well, that alone, but plus like, okay, like you said, you don't know anybody.
No, I didn't know any of them, you know, and didn't know the country. I didn't say, hey, we're going to go down here 7 miles, turn at the corner by the windmill that's got a broken fan, go 300 yards and then turn back in oat thicket, you know.
I don't know if any of you else know ranch directions. I think there's a lot of similarities, but ranch directions are exactly like that. You get the old guy that's like, oh, past the windmill that's not there anymore, but you'll see like a wide spot and then turn at the, and you're thinking what?
And you get lost. And I was in fear of that team in a way, because if they run off with the wagon, tear it up, you know, I'm not going to abandon ship until the last minute, but it got better, you know, and you get into a routine to where after the first couple of moves, I'm thinking, okay, there ain't going to be much sleep here. There's going to be a whole lot of work, and you're going to have to get that team harnessed every day, you know? So it's what the old cooks did so many years ago. And I figured if they could do it, surely I could do it, you know? And, I remember about probably the second day that we was at a camp, there was an old feller. I was in my maybe middle 30s to late 30s. And he was probably 70 at the time. And most folks would bring horses in like either with a remuda or in a trailer, you know, but not old Mac. He jumped his in the back of the pickup. They had stock racks up. He just hauled his 2 horses in on the pickup, you know. And I'm thinking, this old feller's, he's been there, you know. And he wore an old pair of Levi's. And you've seen so many of them old timers that roll the cuffs up, you know, they're on the bottom of the boots. And you could just tell by looking with him, he wasn't just a cowboy. He lived cowboy.
Yeah.
You know, his old face was leathered and scarred up, looked like a road map that'd been run over 100 times. His old hands had arthritis in them. And he'd be known to sneak out of camp at night in his pickup, go to town.
Really?
Yeah, and indulge in some spirits.
Oh.
You know? And that's why they told me, don't sleep out in the wide open, sleep under the wagon. He might run over you if you got a chance coming back into camp. But he would show up. I mean, I'd get up at 2. Breakfast is at 4:30. And he would show up every morning at 2:30. And come over there, and I didn't have old Bertha at the time, that old big wood stove. I was just cooking in a hole in the ground with fire.
You know, wow.
Had a grate on it. And he would come over there and kneel down on his haunches right by that fire where the smoke was just blowing in his face the whole time.
And he didn't care?
It didn't even bother him. And I've breathed more smoke than I ever wanted to breathe in my life, you know? And I remember him telling me one time, he said, smoke does 2 things for you. And I said, what's that, Mac? He said, first thing that I'm looking for it to do is keep them skeeters off of me.
Yeah.
And I said, well, it might be do that. But I said, I think it's going to be hard on your lungs and your eyeballs if you stay there long enough. He said, you ever heard the saying, being baptized by fire? And I said, yeah. He said, I'm being baptized by smoke. he said, it brings back so many memories from all the fires I've sat around in my life and watched them, you know. Was the fire built right? Is it good wood? And he got to telling me, I didn't know he was a philosopher, you know, but he got to telling me about, how's your fire burning? I'm not talking about this one in the ground, the one that's in your heart. What you got going on in there? Is it got good wood on it? And I'm thinking, what is this old man talking about? You know,
you're like, I'm just trying to make coffee.
2:45 in the morning, I'd just like to make some coffee and some biscuits. And but he'd stay 30 minutes and converse with you every morning.
Really?
About something. And then he'd just walk off like a gray ghost. That old smoke, it just seemed like it just followed him. And I'd just watch him get plumb out of sight. And I'm thinking, first of all, was this real?
Yeah.
You know, was this man like a ghost that just come in there to try to give me some advice? I think we go back into, not all fire is bad fire.
So when, as the mornings progress, and you're kind of getting more snippets of this guy's philosophy, is it sinking in? Are you gathering little?
When you're building a fire, especially for a cooking fire,
yeah,
you're putting a lot of material in there, a lot of fuel, mm-hmm. you know, because number one, I got to have the heat to fry something. Number two, I got to have the coals to bake something, you know. So you're looking for a good hard wood, you know, that's going to make you good coals, put out a good amount of heat, but it'll also really be well on Dutch oven cooking. And I remember one morning he was sitting over across from me and I'd poured him a cup of coffee and I never seen him sit in a chair. He just always on his old haunches, you know. He'd have that coffee cup in his hand and he'd say, using that mesquite wood today, are you? I said, well, that's all I see down here besides oak. And I said, I don't know if I don't like the oak smoke. I just think the mesquite smells better to me because that's what I was raised mm-hmm. on, what I was around, you know. And he said, hardwood. He said, it'll make a difference. He said, you keep throwing hardwood on a fire, you'll always be good. And I said, what do you mean, Mac? I said, I ain't throw something in there and ain't going to burn like a paper plate. And he said, a lot of time in life, Kent, when you go to stoking your own fire, he said, you'll see something out there and you'll think, boy, that'll make a fire right there. Big old log. See how big that log is? I'm going to put that on there. My fire will grow forever. And you pick it up and you realize it's hollow. There ain't nothing in it. Mm-hmm. And you set that in that fire and it burns away so quick. So many times in life, especially for me, I'd see something out there where I'd think, oh, I'm going to do this or I'm going to get that. And you're so disappointed in it after you see the end result.
Appearances can be deceiving.
Yes.
Some of these maybe desires or what we see are hollow.
Yeah. I think that was the point he was trying to make.
Interesting.
And he said, if you're going to go through life and you're going to have a passion about you and you're going to have a fire, he said, first of all, you want it to burn every day. Because if you don't tend to fire, what happens?
Just goes out.
It just pew, gone. Ain't nothing there but ash. He said, make sure you have a wood pile. And I said, I got a big one, Mike. And he said, no. He said, I'm talking about around you. Make sure you have a wood pile in life. He said, that's the good people around you. That's the ones you got to rely on. Do you have a good, faithful life, Kent? Do you have someone in your life that's taught you about the Bible, taught you about Jesus? That's good wood. That's a wood pile. And he just got up and walked off. You know what I'm thinking?
Let that simmer.
I don't know what's going on here, but every day was a little sermon. And he was no preacher.
Yeah.
But
those are the best kind.
But he had these little words. And sometimes they wouldn't sink in until I laid in the bedroll at night and I'd think about them. I struggle going to the grocery store for two things. I mean, one is I forgot the list. Two, I don't want to make time to go.
I know. And it feels like sometimes it's just like such a long way to the grocery store.
Yeah. I feel like Pony Express riding forever.
But you know what's great is when it just shows up at your door.
Yeah. You know, the thing I like about Omaha Steaks is they come so well packaged. I don't have to worry about, did I get here right at the right time? You know, FedEx pulled up. I got a notice. This stuff is frozen. This stuff is good. It's fresh. And it's packaged right because there's no waste.
You made the most amazing thing. In fact, it was last night.
Yes, ma'am.
And it was this wine beef sauce reduction over rice. And I said, oh my gosh, what is this? Where did you get this?
Omaha Steaks. It was some tenderloin that they had sent us. And when I say it's packaged right, there's no waste in a serving. You think, oh, there's three steaks in here, but I got to throw them all out. I'm not going to use them. So it's very handy to have two servings.
That you can just pull out.
Yes.
But you know what? They're not just known for their steaks. No. As you may think in their title, we had some great fish the other day. Chicken, pork.
Yeah.
It'll all show up right at your door.
The thing that really sets them apart at Omaha Steaks is they age their beef a minimum of 28 days.
And that's going to give maximum tenderness and flavor, right?
Yes, because you're getting all that flavor in there. But it's grass-fed, grain-finished beef that comes to you at your doorstep, and you can order what you want, when you want. Set up a schedule.
Taste the Omaha Steaks difference and never settle for grocery proteins again.
Get flavorful, high-quality proteins delivered by visiting omahasteaks.com. Plus $35 off when you use the promo code COWBOYKENT at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code COWBOYKENT. Terms apply and see sites for details.
I think we can also relate fire to our passions.
Yes.
As well. And, you know, we can get really, quote unquote, fired up about something. Yep. And we're excited about it. And like you said, if we let our ashes burn out, it's just smoke left.
Yeah.
So like, how do we keep our passions going? And I think it's true. It's like the people that we're surrounded by, even our mentality and our thoughts.
Yep.
But we have to keep nurturing that, right? Like, yeah, we can't build a fire and keep it going by ourselves.
Nope.
We need good wood. We need good people around us.
Yeah. And if it's bad wood or if it's wet wood, you know, bad wood will burn up and you ain't got nothing left. Wet wood just makes a lot of smoke. And what does smoke do? Clouds your vision. That's where you get people in your life that you think, have you heard this saying? They're just blowing smoke.
Yeah.
There's so many things, and I think that I've been through too, where I'm thinking, yeah, these people know what they're talking about. I'm going to buy this horse or I'm going to buy this pickup.
Oh, for sure.
And you know, and then you think, man, they done covered me up with smoke. That horse is crippled as he can be, and three tires fell off that pickup before I ever got it started. You know, so I really think it's if you take your hat off and fan the fire every once in a while. So if you're not wearing a hat, take your hands and put them in a prayer position. Fan that fire. Ask God, say, Lord, you need to stoke my fire. You need to show me what wood I need to put on it because I can't do this by myself.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think we rely too much on ourselves.
Yeah.
That we have to take on the load. We have to build the fire. Yeah. We have to keep it going. It's only me. Everybody's counting on me. And that is absolutely not the case. I think that's when we really can get hurt.
Oh, yeah.
You had mentioned the wet wood.
Yeah.
And that's a huge no-no in our line of work. That's one of the worst things you can come along is wet wood.
Make bad dreams happen.
Yeah. And that just reminded me of a time when we were in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
I remember this time.
We had, we were working or cooking for a festival. You had done this festival for like 14 years.
Yeah.
And it was a chuck wagon kind of Western festival. And we'd bring the wagon all the way from Oklahoma to Eastern Tennessee.
Forever.
And cook for these different events throughout the
sometimes
week.
Twice a day.
And for this particular one, they had us on a parking lot.
Yep.
Which is our worst enemy. We have the Dutch ovens. We have kind of like the sand pit built. And something that had happened that we were not familiar with being in Oklahoma, it had rained a lot.
Yeah. And they had a little ice storm to go with it.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to bring us wood. Now, this is a breakfast meal, too. Going to start like.
How many were we cooking for?
I think it's like 350.
For breakfast. So what? God, we were out there at 3?
Yeah. Biscuits, gravy, scrambled eggs. I think that was it. And bacon or sausage. And we're waiting on this guy to bring the wood. And we're waiting and we're waiting. And he shows up and he dumps it out of this dump truck. And you could like get like a wet dish rag. You could wring water out of it. You know, I mean, it's bad. So then I noticed it on your face a little. And I had it in my heart a little like, we can't do this. We ain't got no wood. We ain't gonna make it, you know?
There's so many times, especially like when you're cooking or especially for events, when you're having to rely on some like outside people to furnish things or help. And I get to a point where I'm like, forget it. Doesn't like, I'm over it. This isn't working. I just want to leave.
It does cross your mind, but you've always told me I was one to really know how to improvise in situations. And I learned that, I think, by having that Dust Bowl mentality that was blowed into my head so many years ago when I was little. You never give up, you know? So I look around and we keep a 10-gallon propane bottle, got a torch hooked to it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we usually start the fire with. Well, you could put it in there and keep fire going in Bertha in that sand pit to fry something. But if you ever took it out of there, it was out mm-hmm. because it's so wet. It just didn't want to dry out. And Shan said, how are we going to cook 400 or 500 biscuits? We can't even get no coals. And a little light bulb turned in on up here. It don't happen often, you know. And I'm thinking, that torch.
Oh, yeah.
Put them biscuits in that oven. Heat the top a little while. Heat the bottom a little while. And it's loud. Gets on your nerves. But I think this will work. We're all the time in life faced with something to where we have maybe a plan, mm-hmm. but then something goes wrong and it don't work. And the first instinct you have is, like you said, I'm done. I'm through. Y'all go to McDonald's, get your breakfast. I ain't got no wood. I can't make this. Mm-hmm. And if we all did that, what would happen? Everybody go hungry. And then your name and your brand for what you stand for is tarnished. Why don't you hire that guy?
And also in those situations, like we're so, at least for me, I'm so in my own world of like, okay, how am I going to get this done? What are we going to do? The end result is really important.
Yeah.
And as you're saying this, I'm realizing how we handle that situation and what we put out is a reflection of us, but it's also a message to all those people around us
yep.
and around you. Meaning what you're working on and what you produce, other people are watching.
Yep.
So possibly we were maybe a little bit of an inspiration to somebody because they realized like we had a horrible morning. We had wet wood. We didn't have what we needed yet. Here's a hot breakfast for you.
Yeah.
And how did we turn the passion that we have for cooking into an end result that maybe inspired somebody?
It's not only the fire that we created outside, but the fire that we had inside our heart, the faith that we had to, after we realized you can fix this problem, you can get this done.
Yeah, but for sure, I couldn't have done that by myself. And I guess you were the one that was stoking my fire in that situation. And that's what's so important. You've got to find what stokes your fire, what's your passion, and who is going to inspire that for you.
That is
and be a good role model. Kent, you had mentioned having a plan.
Yeah.
And following through with that plan.
Yeah.
So we had a plan that didn't go so well.
That we did.
So a lot of you have heard us talk about the house fire that we had gone through. A little backstory. This was in the summer of 2024.
June.
So we're just coming up on 2 years. We had a house in Ruidoso, New Mexico, and we were in the process of moving full-time from Oklahoma to New Mexico.
Yep.
Plan was we were going to live there full-time. Part of the reason was it was getting really hard to cook in Oklahoma.
Hot.
Because especially in summertime, which that is now turning out to be like 9 months of the year.
It feels like it.
When we were filming videos, we had to be done by like 8 in the morning. Otherwise, it was getting to be like 100 degrees.
Yep.
That's before we were building a fire.
Mm-hmm.
And we were filming. And I just remember like Kent is like sweating in the food. He's hot. He's red. And I'm telling him like, make it look edible and look like you're having a good time. And it was just getting really rough. And also the wind. And so we just needed a change.
Yep.
And you had cooked in New Mexico in the Gila before when you were guiding elk hunters. And so you had always loved the area and we had gone for our wedding, our wedding anniversary. I had never been to the area. I'm like, let's just go and check it out. And when we left, we had made a offer on a house.
In 2 days.
It was crazy. Super crazy. And anyway, so, and I remember as we were, before we had really decided full time that we're going to move there, I decided to move all my precious, wonderful things, memorabilia, everything that I loved. I wanted to move into that house because that was going to be my happy place. Like this was our retreat and just it, our place of absolute joy. Right. So I remember we had done one of our like final loads.
Yes.
Over to the house and we'd stayed there for a couple of days and we left and we got back to Oklahoma. Did we get a call from a neighbor first or was it our Simply Safe alarm system?
I was coming back from Altus, Oklahoma, and went over there to get something. And Phyllis, our neighbor, called. And it's about, I'd say, 1 o'clock, you know.
In the afternoon?
Yeah. And she said, Ken, I've called you many times and told you we had a fire, but this is a bad fire. She said, it's so windy. She said, I bet we have to evacuate. I hadn't been 10 miles down the road, and Phyllis called again, her and Truman, such sweet people. And she said, Kent, we got to go now. This is bad. And about the time I got home and I was telling you and we're in there and we were listening and then Simply Safe alarm went off, you know, and people were telling me, hey.
It was weird. Yeah. So our Simply Safe goes off and we get a smoke alarm in the garage.
Yeah.
And then Simply Safe calls us. And they said, hi, you've got an alarm going off. Would you like us to dispatch the fire department? And I said, lady, I think the whole place is on fire. They could care less about our single house.
Yeah.
But at that time,
it still didn't sink in.
It wasn't even a thing. It was like, oh, yeah, fires happen in that area. Fires don't burn down whole communities anymore. Like that's not something that's done. From the time that we got the alarm, looking back, we figured the house was completely gone within 2 hours of that.
Yeah. You know, we bordered up to the National Forest.
Yeah.
And I had trimmed the trees back. We had concrete siding. We had a metal roof.
We had a Trex deck. You know, we were fireproofed.
There was 40 and 50 mile an hour winds that day. And when you have that much fuel and that much wind, it's time just to get out. Time for everybody to say, we need to find a safe place. You know, it didn't just affect our house. It burned our neighborhood. It burned so many houses in the area. 2 people were killed, you know, and you can't. I remember laying there all night thinking, our house made it. Our house made it.
It was really hard because we had an app called Watch Duty, which is a fire app. And it was hard because the updates weren't correct. They weren't doing them a lot. Nobody knew what was going on. We were just relying on Facebook.
Yeah.
And you'd hear different things like, oh, this is completely gone. Oh, no, this is safe. And we still had hope. It was like, it's not going to happen to us.
Yeah. And we had a friend out here that's a contractor. And he had called and he'd said, Kenny said, fire's bad back over y'all's way. He snuck in there.
On a four-wheeler, like in the middle of the night.
Yeah, like 3 o'clock in the morning. And we were, at the time, had loaded the trailer to start our first episode to go for the Cast Iron Cowboys series to Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to the barn at 5 o'clock in the morning. And text pops up, Garrett. And there was a picture. And he said, I'm sorry, Kent. Hang on just a minute. It's gone. And I just fell in the road. And I remember just running in the house and telling you, and you just collapsed too, because this was our dream. This is what we decided. This was our forever place. This was our sanctuary.
You know, and I don't want to get too, like, I felt a little bad because I didn't want to get wrapped up in the things of it. Yeah. You know, like, oh, all of our things were there and it was a structure. Like, that wasn't what we lost the most of, especially for me, because for me, this was our first home together.
Yeah.
And this was my,
It's okay, Sean.
This was my happy place that I had not experienced in a long time. And that's what we lost.
Yeah.
And I thought, what does this mean?
Yeah. I remember my oldest son and his wife said that we're going to drive out there, Dad, and see if there's anything.
Yeah, know? Because, okay, so we get this. This is, and they had completely shut down the town because this was a massive fire. I mean, many of you may be aware because it was on CNN. It was on national news. It was everywhere. But they had closed the town down. Yeah. Like you could not get out or you couldn't get back in. And we had gone to Nebraska because we were like, what else do we do? And so your son and daughter-in-law.
They drove out on a Saturday. I told him, I said, I don't know if y'all can get in because after the ranch in Nebraska, we had to go to another ranch in Wyoming. So we were going to be 2 weeks before we could ever get back, you know.
And I think it was a week until they could get in, right?
Yeah. And he called and he said, it's just ash. Ash and twisted metal, you know. And he said,
Tara was so sweet. She like dug through and she got me like art, like china plates in pieces.
You know, at the time, and y'all have heard us say this too, we'd lost the Beagle right before that. And then this happened. And when we got through, we loaded up when we got back to Hollis that night and we drove to Ruidoso the next morning. We put some camping stuff in there because we knew we didn't have no place to stay, you know, and we drove out here.
When we had planned to just camp like in the truck or did we have a teepee?
Yeah, we was just going to camp by the house.
We were going to camp on our lot. Stupid. Stupid idea. And I remember I think you kind of went into a different place.
Yeah.
You just kind of shut that out and you were more mechanical. You went there and you were just like digging through. You were going to see what was left, what had happened. You found like some Dutch ovens. Our stove had completely melted.
Yeah, and the glass, it was a Viking stove. The glass in that stove was rated 2200.
This thing was
and
so
it
hot.
Melted.
Yeah.
Run out on the floor. But everything burnt.
It was weird.
Sort of straight down because the china that you had was stacked.
The hutch had just like fallen straight down and plates were still stacked. They weren't together, but they were just, and you were digging through. And I remember I was trying to, and then I couldn't.
Yeah.
And I just went to the truck.
Yeah.
And
the smell, I mean, and Jason told me, he said, Dad, you need to take you some good mask out there. He said, the amount of ash and toxic chemicals from the galvanization of the tin that got so hot to everything else that burnt, you know, he said, it'll hurt you bad. So we bought us some of them good masks, you know, we was working for SWAT maybe.
Yeah.
Nah.
But it was still, and I realized it was making me sick.
Yeah.
And we couldn't stay there. Then we luckily there was a hotel that had some vacancy because it was really hard to find places. But I remember I sat in the truck and I had the Bible and I just turned to Isaiah. Man, guys, Isaiah got me through that fire. Because it's really interesting. Isaiah is split into two sections. There's the first one is the Book of Woe. We were going through that. And then there's the Book of Consolation. And Isaiah got me through.
Yeah. After I dug around in there for a while, because I took my dad's saddle out there that he had got right after he got out of the war. And I'd put it up sort of like a showpiece, remember, up on top of that little wall. And I'm thinking there probably ain't nothing left. Maybe the D-rings and the D-rings on a saddle or what the cinch go through. And they were brass. And I took a rake. And a sawzall. I was cutting tin out of the way. I was cutting what was left of a hot water heater out of the way just trying to get, because you knew where the rooms were, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember getting that rake and raking around through there. And there was a cast iron skillet that I always just kept in the oven, an old Griswold. And I had it forever. Cracked it in half. There was nothing left of the saddle. I remember you were down there in the pickup, and I could just, I couldn't. Couldn't go at that time. I needed God to tell me something. Say, you're going to make it. You can get this done. So you could walk out of the back of our house and hit the National Forest. There was good trails.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a favorite spot I had up there that you could look out across and see Sierra Blanca. And there was a big, giant alligator juniper there. And I mean, one of the biggest trees I'd ever seen is a juniper. And the base was felt like it was 4 foot around. And I knew where that spot was. And I mean, and everything's just black. The dirt's black. What trees is left is like black twigs.
I had never seen anything like it. It looked like a war zone. Yeah. I remember looking across at our neighbors and there was a burnout truck. Yeah. I mean, it was just the most bizarre.
And you know, the thing about this fire too is 3 days after that, the monsoon came.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found that tree or what was left of it, there was just the base of the trunk. And it burned a spot, a circle, maybe 8 or 10 inches around to where you could see through that old hollow burned out stump. And I just fell to my knees and I said, Lord, only you can fix this. Only you can make this country beautiful again. You can make the skies so picture clear. You can make the trees green again and there will be green grass. And I turned around, Shannon, it was probably there when I went by, but I turned around and there was 3 little blades of grass behind me that were sticking straight up to heaven. I said, thank you, God. I can make it.
Were you ever mad at God during this?
I wasn't mad. I just asked him why.
Yeah.
Why could you let this happen, you know? And there's that question a lot in life. Why, God, did you let this happen to me? I didn't deserve this. God has a plan. We may have to take the steps, but he knows the path we're on. He may put something in that path to test our faith. And when I walked back down to the pickup, and you told me, you said, we can't stay here. This is making me sick.
You were determined to stay there. Yeah. I think because you almost felt like you had an obligation to it. It's weird. Fire is a very different devastation.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I felt like the house was almost a person that we had lost. And I felt so bad because I thought, we left you. Yeah. We left you alone. We had to go back to Hollis and we left you to this fire and it's our fault. It's a very weird concept.
And I remember as we drove out of there and you told me stop. And there was a lady that owned that house before us, or maybe two before us. And she had some rocks out there that marked. She didn't?
No. So this is after this had all happened, this was crazy. I got an email from a lady and she said, I don't even know how she figured this out, but she said, you owned the house two people before me. And she just apologized. And then she said that house was so special to us. And we had a cat and a dog was buried out in the front yard. And I remember before we left, I took 2 rocks and I wrote their name in marker on them.
I'm a very strong man. I don't let much of the world bother me. You can put a lot on me. But I can remember coming in one day after this and just laid my head down on the table and cried like a baby. And Shen said, what's wrong? And I said, I can't be strong anymore. I can't do it. I thought I could, but I can't. And she said, you don't have to be strong right now. God is strong for us. And when we reference back at the first, as a blacksmith would pump them old bellows to make the fire white hot, to bend anything, to shape anything, sometimes you have to walk through fire. You have to walk through what God's laid out there for you to be molded into the person that he wants you to be.
You had mentioned before being baptized by fire.
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
We got her, sugar. Head to toe.
What was the message?
Never lose faith. He doesn't aim for us to go through this alone. But was that the first person you reached out to when something bad happened to you in life? Did you get down on your knees and you say, God, get me through this? Or was it, God, why did you let this happen to my house? Why did you take this away from me? You know, there's so much out there that hurts, that'll break your heart. But I have never went through anything bad, from losing parents to losing a house to losing a beagle, that there wasn't a blessing in the end of it, because I told God, God, you got to get me through this. I can't do it. My heart is not strong enough by myself. And he does.
Yeah. I think when I asked you if you were mad at God, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, in tragedy, you can be very mad at God.
Oh yeah.
I was like you, I wasn't mad. I was just so confused and hurt and thought like, why?
Yeah.
But I think you've made some interesting connections with fire.
Yeah.
One being the fire that's your passion, that you have to stoke, that you have to keep going. And then kind of the fire that creates rebirth through devastation.
Yeah. You know, and there's been so many fires affected people that we know and are in the industry, really sort of in a way that we are, and that's ranching, that have been destroyed. And I guarantee you folks, and I don't mean this bad for anybody that ain't rural and ain't ranch, them folks is rooted deep down in the trust of God, I promise you. Because if you're a rancher or a farmer, maybe if you're a ditch digger or you're a dentist, if you ain't got him deep down in your pocket and in your heart, and when something like this goes on, it'll break you to nothing.
I have a question for everybody. And then also I have a question for you to maybe give a message to everyone.
All right.
How do you stoke your fire?
How do you stoke your fire? Well, first of all, I think your fire has to be a passion that you really believe in. You have to pray about that. You know, there's lighter fluid. There's propane you can start a fire with. If your passion is that fire that you want to do in your life and you want to keep it going, when you reach for that box of matches, it's a Bible. It's God's word. When you strike that, it'll light a fire in you. But it's, you got to surround yourself with good wood, which is good people.
Yep.
People that have the faith that you have, people that have the strength that you have, people that believe in the things that you are and you want to be, not the people who are going to say, you ain't never going to make it. You ain't going to mount to nothing, you know?
And I keeping that going and letting, one of my favorite verses is, let your light shine among others so they may see your good works.
That's right.
And I think more so we kind of get maybe a little indulgent and selfish with our passions because it feels so good for us to do what we love. But then when you can share it and share that light and be an inspiration to others, that's what's really going to make your fire grow.
Yeah.
So in that same thought then, how do we get over a devastation after a fire?
I'm going to look at it this way. I've cooked on a lot of fires, and especially when I was cooking with a hole in the ground and the fire go out at night, there's nothing left in there but ash. And it just looks bad. I mean, what you going to do with it? Do you scoop it out of the hole and throw new wood in there? I hope there's enough ember in there, a little coal left in there. If I put some kindling in there, it'll start back. When that house burnt, there was nothing left. You could scoop up ash, you could scoop up anything, but there was nothing left that would burn. That burn had to come from somewhere else. It had to come from the man upstairs.
Yep.
And it had, there's so many ways you can build a fire. You can stack it like a teepee, you know, where it's, or you can stack it like a Lincoln log set. But if you're going to build a fire that lasts, make sure, number one, we said it before, you got a big wood pile. And that's your cornerstone. That's God. That's your church. That's your faith. And then bring, as you bring more wood in there, that's the people you believe in. That's the people that believe in you. And when you look at tragedy or you go through tragedy, you can reach out to those around you. get another stick of wood. Say, hey, could you bring some wood over here and throw on my fire? And if they're good people, they'll respond. If they're not good people, their wood's wet.
You can't do it alone.
No.
I think that's a bit, like, if I could share anything, you can't do it alone. And you shouldn't be able to do it alone. It's okay to ask for help from your family, from your friends, from God, wherever you get your strength. Keep doing that. Where you get your strength, where you find that little spark, keep doing that, because the fire will grow from that.
Yeah. And don't let your ashes grow cold, because when they're there and they're cold and a breeze takes them away from you, there's not even a resemblance that you were even there.
I think it, now looking back, it's the smoke is cleared for us. And we, luckily, we found the blessings pretty quickly after that. We found another house. We had a great situation there. We have a great neighbors now. It's a great place, community. So luckily we were able to see that blessing. Now, a lot of you may have had a tragedy and still don't see that blessing. Maybe you're in your tragedy and you don't see the blessing. Stick with it.
Yeah.
Because it will get there.
Don't give up.
Yeah. Yep. It's hard. It's hard when you're in it, but, there is, and we've said this before, right now, if you're in it, it's the little blessings you got to look for, because that will give you a step forward every day.
Yes,
so thank you for y'all sitting down with us as we went through this little backstory of what the fire did and how we came out of it.
Yeah. We've been baptized by fire, sugar.
Yep.
And I've been blessed by smoke that has graced me, has drifted across many other camps to many other people that I've got to meet. But I think if there's anything that I could leave them with is find your peace in life. Throw the wood on it. Strike a match. Peace brings happiness. Happiness brings joy. And when your heart is full, ain't nothing better.
Let her go.
But we thank y'all so much for tuning in with us. Leave us a comment. Let us know if you've been through a tragedy. We'll sure lift you up in prayer. We will. And give us a rating, right, Shan?
Oh, yeah. If you could give us a little like or a 5-star, that would be amazing.
It would for that. But it is with great pride, honor, and privilege that I tip my hat to all our servicemen and women and all the veterans that have kept that old flag a-flying. We commend you all, and we lift you up in prayer daily. Rest of you, hey, y'all aren't fans, you're family. We thank you so much for letting us come into your life a little bit. Don't forget, podcast every Sunday. Cooking video every Wednesday. We got you cornered up. We're trying to keep you. We love you all. God bless you each and every one. And I'll see you down the podcast trail.
Pioneer.